Blog Talk Radio.
What up? Good morning, everybody. How you all doing? It is Saturday, the 15th of April, where, again, you know, as we get older, the quicker and faster these months tend to go. But here we are, almost freaking May. Speaking of freaking, the Freaknik documentary is out and is leaked to the public. And I want to say something to you all from the bottom of my heart. If you just so happen to see my ass on that documentary, mind your business. Because I was stationed in Montgomery, Alabama from 94 to 97. So one, two, maybe three times I made my way over to the Freaknik. And if you see a black G20 Infinity with the sunroof open and a dude talking out the shot, again, just mind your business. Because that very well may be your boy. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, I was almost there, brother. Let me let you know. If I hadn't gotten pregnant in 1996, there would have been a whole documentary on your girl. Okay?
Look, it is definitely a situation where your boy was in the building.
Tell me this ain't the most CIA shit. Since when do we have to worry about some shit we did in the 90s? This is literally bringing up old shit. This is like the quintessential.
They drudging.
The quintessential. Why
they
you bringing
drudging.
Up old shit, bro?
They drudging the bottom of the pile for this. I agree with you, sis. It is definitely bananas. But
and then they didn't say, hey, we got this old conference of black engineers we want to show.
Right.
They did not say, oh, look, we got this. No, we want to see the debacle. We want to see y'all do.
Let me tell you something.
I call them freak Nickies.
Let me tell you something.
But this is not fair. We're 50 years old now. This is not fair, Lee. I'm 50. I got my grandkids on my lap.
Mm-hmm.
right? I'm establishing, I'm now trying to bring back the standards of learning and intellectual excellence that were set down by my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't have shit to say to me 20, 30 years ago. Shut up, Grandma, because when you was popping it, nobody had a camera to show it.
But my point, though, I want to say Freaknik was some wild shit. I mean, that was some wild shit. And it is crazy to me that people actually recorded that stuff. Like, yo, what were y'all thinking?
See,
I
was
thinking?
So high. That's right, Lee. You were so busy. You didn't see him with that. You didn't see him with the thing over there.
It wasn't high. It was, you know, folks were free. And camcorders were a status symbol at the time. And you know, you got jokers. I saw this one picture. A guy had a camcorder pointed at a young lady who had a camcorder pointed at him. And it was just that, you know. And it was wild. Like, I remember the first one I went to. Because one of my boys who were remain nameless, I ain't no snitch, so I ain't putting people out there like that. But he was going to Morris Brown. So we went to high school together. So I calmed down. Again, this was 94, so he was in his sophomore, junior year. I calmed down by the time I got stationed down there. I calmed down, and I hook up with him. And I'm like, son, what's the word? Yo, let me tell you. The first one, truly bananas. I'll tell you why. So I come thinking I'm going to stay with this dude. He in the dorms. He couldn't have overnight guests in the dorms. I fuck around. I sleep in my car. I slept in my car for 2 nights, parked outside his dorm at Morris Brown. He would wake me up. I would go up, take a shower, put some fresh clothes on. Because they could have guests, but they couldn't have overnight guests. I would take a shower, put some clothes on. We hop back in the car, and we hit Freaknik. And I'm telling you, thank God gas prices were low, because if they weren't, I wouldn't have been, because you would run out of gas in that mug. Traffic was at a crawl. I mean, it was at a snail's pace. It really was, Pat. Everybody was, it seemed like everybody was in Atlanta for that daggone weekend. It was truly insane. And I truly believe that you could get around faster on foot than you could in a car, because that's how many cars were driving around Atlanta. And everybody was in Atlanta. It was crazy. Any sorority, fraternity you want to think, well represented. It was a gazillion collegiate kids, a gazillion locals, you know, because this was still a good time for the locals in Atlanta. You know, there was an invasion of us northerners, but we hadn't really taken it over yet. I think about 5 years after that, yeah, it was down with the locals, but it was really a mixed crowd. I tell you, the wildest thing that I saw that I will disclose. There was a camper truck. It was a pickup truck, and it had a camper over it. So there's a couple cars in front of me, whatever. I'm driving, trying to pay attention. I had a 5-speed. So I'm driving, trying to pay attention to the traffic pattern. But I'm noticing, like, every time we have to stop, this camper is getting mobbed. So my man, I'm like, yo, I got to find out what's going on. You know me. I'm nosy. I got to find out what's going on, son. Look, take the wheel. Next time we have to stop, whatever. He's like, all right, son. So next time we stop, I'm like, all right, get it. I hop out. He hops over. I run up to the joint. I'm pushing through the crowd, blah, blah, blah. This is how disrespectful Southern men are. These jokers had a sister in the back of that damn camper. Stripping. She was stripping in the back. They were throwing money at her. And if you wanted some additional services, you could pay for that. She would perform that as well. In the damn camper, driving up and down the street. Crazy. That was freaky. It was crazy. I never, ever seen anything like that. I had never seen anything like that. Heard of it, never saw it.
He
it
said,
blew
what they
my
said
mind.
They bust your virtual cherry there, huh?
Yeah,
well,
it blew
free black
my
people,
wig.
Right? Free.
Yeah.
One of the things this country has always had a problem with is our expression of our sexual nature, right? That was the whole point of the Victorian era, put all them goddamn clothes on. Like, we have been progressively getting more and more free with our physical selves as this nation has grown. And honestly, black people are behind the curve. Like, post-Victorian era, when we started the clapper era with the strap, the spaghetti strap dresses, right? And we started raising the hemline. And even with men, we started taking off the vest and just no jacket, just the shirt and tie. And then at one point, we got down to just the shirt opened up. Hell, we got to where we had the shirt opened up to the waistline almost. You understand?
Mm.
So
mm-hmm.
As this nation progresses in its, you know, belief of what, in its virtue, that's what they used to call it, virtue, your ability to hold fast to Judeo-Christian nature in the face of bohemian, primitive African behavior. Because Africans don't
mm-hmm.
have on all the clothes, right? We understand,
mm-hmm.
we commune with, Polynesians commune with nature. Everybody who's not under the foothills of Christian doctrine, really, for real, we listen to nature. If it's hot, take it off. And if it's cold, put the clothes on, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now, Freaknik said, I don't give a damn what's happening. Take it off, right? Take it off and
take
it
all
off. Take as much off as you can and still not get arrested. Do away with Judeo-Christian limits. Do away with what other people said should be legal or moral or just and right, right? That's all some
mm-hmm,
bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Bust it down to basic human nature. And in basic
mm-hmm.
human nature, Lee, we bust it open. You know what I'm saying? The twerk is not new. Twerking been around since pimping been pimping, since humans been humaning, right?
Mm.
The ability for the human black woman's body to move in a certain way and have it captured the attention, right, of
mm-hmm.
other people, that ain't no 1800, 19, that ain't no 17, that ain't no 1300, that ain't no 900, that ain't no 500. That's from zero. That's pre-biblical, right? Will you agree?
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
You would agree? Okay, so now we mad, though. Like, we have a whole judgment system set up, Lee, for women who participated in Freaknik. Like,
no, but I wasn't. I don't dispute that, but I also said the dudes. I said the dudes are so disrespectful to black women. I clearly said that. Like,
see,
I think they
were
just as, if not worse.
Women dictate, and I hate to say it. Ooh, this sounds so, misogynistic, but women dictate how you treat us.
Mm.
You know how to step to each woman. You see a woman, right? When you see
mm-hmm.
that cleave between her titties, if you can see the space between a woman's titties, it orients you a certain way, right?
Mm-hmm.
If the space between her titties has a holy Bible there, if she's literally clutching the word of God, you know, don't talk to her about her titty meat.
Mm.
But if you can see the titty meat, and it's decorative and it's shiny with sparkles on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you are
mm-hmm.
not wrong to mention the titty meat.
The titty meat. Look, did I share the story when I went to brunch, breakfast, whatever, a couple weeks ago on a Sunday, a young lady come in, and she was wearing a jumpsuit that was her size, but it wasn't her size for that very reason. So the jumpsuit was her size, but her titties were too big for that jumpsuit. And them jokers was coming out, and she literally was struggling with that jumpsuit every 3 seconds to put her titties back inside of it. I'm like, yo, what was the sense of you wearing that outside? Seriously.
Exactly.
That's not sexy.
Because
it's not cute.
Because she needed to bulk your attention. She needed your attention.
No,
she validated
I
herself
you.
In her ability to broker your attention.
I hear you. I feel you. I'm not there. I'm so not there. And maybe it's getting older, you know, slash maturity. I don't know what the hell you want class to call it. I just know that's not cute. Like, another thing for me, I'm not a tattoo dude. You got a gazillion tattoos on your body. That's a turnoff for me. I don't care how fine you are, and God knows I love me a big-ass booty. I don't care how fucking big your booty is. You got a gazillion tattoos on, that's a wrap, shorty. Like, that's not cool to me. It's not cute to me. You know, to me, you can be expressive as you want to be expressive, but we are still a product. And you have to make sure, well, for me, I have to make sure that my product is as marketable as possible. And not to push away anybody if I'm trying to sell my product to them.
To adhere to,
you need me to hear what?
Adhere to the idea of being, to integrate or not integrate, to assimilate or not assimilate. This is literally the black.
But you,
I mean, I ain't trying to be funny, but
you don't have to assimilate. I don't think it's a thing of assimilation, because I'm not saying that no tattoos whatsoever. But when you have your both of your entire arms, tattoos on your face, your neck.
They call sleeves.
The one between your titties. And I don't want to be hugged up on a walking billboard. Like, that's not for me. It could
and
very well be for somebody else.
Yeah.
But that's not for me.
My daughter
I
think my daughter is on her like 20th or 22nd tattoo, right?
Mm.
She's got a tattoo of Amy Winehouse's eye on her back of her neck. She has a sword. She has a katana tattooed on her face.
Yeah, you said something like this.
She has Osiris and Isis's crowns tattooed on one leg.
Mm-hmm.
She has octopus tentacles tattooed on the other leg.
Mm-hmm.
She has
So what is that?
Daria. You know Daria? Do you know who Daria is?
No, but what, go back to the octopus
Daria
tentacles.
Daria is a white cartoon.
What are the octopus tentacles supposed to represent?
Listen, I gave up, Lee, on her flesh.
Okay, I got you.
This is what
okay.
I'm trying to explain to you. I gave up on her flesh. Mm. I was like, I gave up Amy Winehouse's eye.
Mm.
But after that was like 4 or 5. And then here's the problem. Some of those tattoos are, their homage is to me. But I'm like, no.
How?
Meaning she got them because she wanted her body to reflect that she is of me.
I understand that,
but
how? How was that supposed to be an homage to you?
Actual tattoo. Exactly. So she worked that out in her own reasoning, right? She worked that out. She decided what that was going to be, and I was not in there when she got in the chair.
Mm-hmm.
But then this is what I said. I said to myself, okay, did you put that, is that any old thing? She said, no, that's not any old thing. That's my homage to my mama, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is my homage to Isis and Osiris are the dead children that, you know, my two dead children. I have two living children, and I have two non-living children, and she put their mm-hmm. crowns on their body. So when I address the idea of what you're doing to your flesh, I have to almost tell her, forget those people that should have been. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Forget your allegiance to whatever you feel like is important. We can't say that no more. We're done with that. We're done telling people what is important to them. And that, to me, is mm-hmm. our new cornerstone. You allowed people to tell you what was important, and you followed suit, Lee. But what we need to understand is there's a new class of people who are going to need more information if you want them to just follow suit. If you want them to agree to what you think is important, you're going to have to vet it. You're going to have to show it's important. You're going to have to show it's historical and it's future important, or else they're not mm-hmm. buying in. Like, they're done buying in. And it hurts our feelings, Lee, because there's a lot of shit Judeo-Christian behavior that you and I bought into because we felt like this is how to keep society normal, whatever mm-hmm. that is. And they said, fuck normal. Normal is determined by the era of the people participating in it.
Mm-hmm.
Freaknik is normal for 1965 to 2000, Freaknik is normal. But after the onset of AIDS, after the onset of the AIDS virus, of the untreatable herpes virus, right, of mm-hmm. gonorrhea resistant, gonorrhea resistant. Anyway, there's another one that's resistant to treatment. We have at least six different sexually transmitted diseases that we have not found the treatment for. Herpes, one, A, B, and C, right?
Mm-hmm.
HIV, 1 and 2. There is not one HIV virus. There are two HIV viruses. Mm-hmm. Did you know that, Lee?
I did. The commercials don't let you forget.
They don't let you forget. And so we're dealing with still syphilis, still gonorrhea. So this behavior became a non-thing when we started really honing in on sexually transmitted diseases.
You think that was it, sis?
What
Freaknik became a non-thing. Freaknik became a non-thing when Atlanta realized it was losing money because all those black young kids was coming down there and it was clogging up the streets and keeping businesses from moving down there that wanted to move down there. That's why Freaknik stopped.
Them teenagers that came down there, they ate. They had to get a hotel room.
They had to eat something
for that day. They had to buy clothes. They had to buy Freaknik gear. All that was happening out of Atlanta. How were they losing money?
Rashi, they weren't teenagers. Those were collegiate students. Most of them were in their early 20s. They weren't teens. So stop that. How were they losing money? Because they were losing big money. They were losing money from developers and investors who wanted to come in and build a building that would be there for 20, 30 years, which added and guaranteed tax-based money. They were losing money that they wanted versus getting money that they saw. It's still the South. It's still Atlanta. The issue was all of those black young folk coming down there and disturbing Atlanta's growth. When they left, Atlanta really blew up. That's why I said it was pretty much a mixed crowd up until about 3-5 years afterward, and then the locals were gone because they just couldn't afford it. You know, there's so much crime in Atlanta, and most of it's committed by the locals because so many of us have moved down and knock them out the box, that they are forced to try to make it and survive. I'm not saying everybody's destitute. That's not what I'm saying at all. But I'm saying there's a lot of crime, a lot of petty crime that happens in Atlanta, a lot of B&Es, a lot of car thefts, a lot of things of that nature. Most of that is caused and or committed by the locals because the jobs that were there for them, they can't get. If somebody like me is going to come down, and I'm not coming down and taking one job. I'm taking two, maybe three. I got that hustle and that drive in me. I'm trying to not only make it, I'm trying to establish something where a lot of folks are settled because they have a home already. At least they got mama's house or grandmama's house or granddaddy's house or whatever to fall back on. So they just trying to make sure that they're comfortable. I'm not trying to make sure I'm comfortable. I'm trying to make sure I live lavish. So I got that drive to go out and get two, three jobs. Well, hell, one of those might have been for you. But you drug your feet. I'm coming through with a head of steam. I'm pounding the concrete. I'm knocking on doors, on windows. Like, yo, I'm trying to get this job. What's up? Well, you all right? I can do both. That's why it stopped. It didn't stop.
Okay, so look, I want you to think about the nature of a freak move. We're talking about. Mm-hmm. I'm likening it to like that. the bikers that come down to Daytona. You understand?
Okay.
Yep. Or like
go to Myrtle Beach.
Huh?
No, go to Myrtle Beach. Go to Myrtle Beach. Make it simple. Go to Myrtle. Compare pretty much apples to apples. And Myrtle Beach is trying to get the black folks out of Myrtle Beach because they're trying to grow. There's a lot of growth going on in Myrtle Beach right now. Conway, Myrtle Beach, going to Pauly's out. Hold on.
So you and your three homies, we headed to get freaky down at Myrtle Beach, right? We're going to eat there. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's revenue for the area. Agreed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're going to shop. Black women or black people don't go nowhere and not buy nothing.
Mm-hmm.
We collaborate with the community and try to get us something out of that community, even if it's illicit. We want to know where the weed at or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're going to travel. We're going to buy gas. All right?
I'm listening.
We're not, unlike you who slept in your car, some of us, we're not going to sleep in our car. We're going to go to a hotel or Airbnb.
Buster, that was the first year. I got tricked. That was the first year. Don't keep bringing that up. It was the first year.
So for those of us who would like to have sex and not in our car, we got to get a room, right?
Right.
Because the freak of freak, Nick, is to freak, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But where am I busted at? Where am I busted open at? Out in the open?
Some people did. A lot of people did.
They did. Them nasty bastards. But most of us got a room. A good portion of us got a room.
Did you ever go to freak meet?
I'm just telling you as an old hoe what it would entail, okay?
Oh, Lord, that person. Well, I don't disagree with that. But, again, Rashi, we're still talking about the South, and we're still talking about the perception of masses of black people. So, again, your reasoning is sound. But the real reason that Freaknik ended, it was too many black folks coming to Atlanta. Period. That's the real reason freak me.
Now, if you said too many black people swarmed on Minneapolis, too many black people swarmed on Helena, Montana.
Mm-hmm.
There were 1 million black people who swarmed on there's going to be a problem. Atlanta don't mean nothing. Atlanta is bigger.
Yes, it does.
So how is Atlanta a problem?
Rashi, your scope is wrong. Your lens is wrong. You're looking at Atlanta as a scope and a lens as it is now, not as it was in the 90s. In the 90s, okay, I liken it to Charlotte because there's this correlation between Charlotte is the new Atlanta. It's just baby Atlanta, right? Well, I was talking to my man the other day. I'm getting around, moving around, blah, 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 blah. Business owner. He and I sitting back, we kicking it because he's a black business owner. I wanted to talk to him. Obviously, I wanted to see if I could do some things with the cat. So one of the things he said was, you know, Charlotte opened up a can of worms. Charlotte wanted to become the new banking center of America. So they opened it up. They were like, yo, come on in. Boom, 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 boom. Then what started happening, crime. They did not correlate the fact that more people come, more crime is going to happen. Again, it goes back to Atlanta. Why is more crime happening? Because you have all these outsiders coming in, and they getting a bag. They're taking the bag from people that have lived there their whole life, whom eventually they would get it together, they would find something, they price it in the same job forever because that was the best job they was going to get or that was the only job they were going to get. They would ride it out until they could either retire with a pension or just until they were old enough to retire, and that's just what they did. My staff is a very aged staff. Most of them cats have been in the same building, though it may have changed names. They've been in the same building for over 30 years. That's the mentality that I found with a whole lot of rooted Southerners. They don't move like us. They find something, they latch onto it, and they gonna ride. Folks like us, we find something, we get in it, like, okay, this is cool, but yo, Kevin and them talking about something better. It's 5G's better. Yo, I'm out. And we gone. Get another phone call in another year or two. Somebody else talking about 8G's better. Yo, I'm out. And I'm gone. Ain't no loyalty. The loyalty is to the dollar. That's how most Northerners move. Northerners move that way. Most Southerners don't move that way. They rock with you, they rock with you, and they're going to ride it out every year. Okay? This is what I found in my experience of living down south. This is my second time living down there. Well, actually, my third time living down there. Okay? So, yes, Rashi, Atlanta is super black now, but in the 90s it wasn't. And they were trying to slow that growth down. Charlotte is doing the same thing. Charlotte is now like, whoa, we need to put the brakes on. So, yeah, we got all this stuff that we guaranteed you, so we're going to take care of that. We're going to honor that. But all you other jokers is knocking on the door, no, we're going to slow that down. We need to figure out what this is going to look like first. We're not going to become Atlanta. And they're not. They're trying not to do that. So they're trying to balance that old and the new. They're trying to stop time, and it's not going to work. It's not going to work. Because, again, you got a boatload of people in Charlotte that are not from Charlotte, and they are taking Charlotte over. They are changing the dynamics of Charlotte. And the old money, code for old white folk, don't like it. But the problem with that is they dying off. So there's only for so long they're going to be able to hold it back. But they are going to hold it back as long as they possibly can. They are going to hold it back as long as they possibly can. So, yes, sis, as I said, no, that is not the case. Atlanta now, yeah, it just would be one of those things. As you see, Super Bowl weekend, NCAA tournaments, Atlanta, they didn't do all that. Atlanta didn't do all that then. They weren't hosting Super Bowls every 3-5 years, NBA All-Star game. They weren't doing that. Mm-hmm. They did not want all them niggas in Atlanta.
You have equated Atlanta's pullback with Freaknik, and I would like you instead to think about the Olympics. I want you to think about the Olympics where they attempted to blow the Olympics up, right?
Mm-hmm. But they were part and parcel.
Do you remember
yes. That's what I'm saying. They were part and parcel. The Olympics in Atlanta happened at the same time, around the same time, that Freaknik was on the decline. And when folk came, the Olympics in Atlanta was 96, which was the decline of Freaknik. When folk came to Atlanta, they were like, yo, this is cool. We want to do business down here. And the amount of business they got from the Olympics said, well, we can offset the money that we're losing if we cut this out. Plus, they already wanted this out, so it made sense. They coalesced. It was a beautiful situation. And they kicked us up. Look at what they're trying to do at Daytona Beach. They're trying to kick the black folks out of Daytona Beach. There's no difference. Talking about crime, blah, blah, blah. Same amount of crime happens no matter what time of the year it is. It just so happens that when the black folks come, you highlight it more so than when they're not there. There's no difference. But black folks come. They stay in hotels. They eat at restaurants, so on and so forth. That doesn't mean they're wanted. It doesn't mean that they're wanted. And if I can offset that money by getting rid of the folks that I don't want, then I will do that. Still the South, Rashi. That's still how them jokers think. Period. Period. Sad, but true.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2023. That don't mean nothing to them. That don't mean nothing to them. We see it. We see it. We talk about it on the show all the time. Things ain't changed like that down there. Not at all. No, look, the entire South is not corrupt. The entire South is not going to hell in a handbag. No, not at all. But as a whole, that is the white man's last stand. It's the white man's last stand. And he's going to defend his land to his last breath. And he sees the South as his land, and he's going to defend it to his last breath.
Mm.
Without a doubt. Why do you think all these states now are passing the very, very ease of buying guns? And these gun stores, registers, cash registers are ringing off the daggone hook. They're getting mobbed with people. I want to say Carolina passed a law not too long ago about handgun purchases. Stores, record profit. People in there buying anything and everything they can get. And Carolina already had pretty loose gun control laws. Hell, that made it even looser. One of the tenets was, If I had a handgun and I wanted to sell it to somebody, I used to have to go to the local police office, sheriff, police department, whatever, depending on the city, whatever, and get a license or approval letter from them, whatever, whatever, and then I can make the sale. Well, you don't have to do that anymore. So now I can just sell whatever I have to whomever I want, and nobody will never know. Now, it would behoove me to go and tell somebody, because that gun is still registered to me, you know what I'm saying, hey, I made a sale, but I don't have to get anybody's approval. I can just make the notification that that gun is no longer registered to me. So, sis, I hear what you're saying. I understand what you're saying. Trust me, I understand where you're coming from. But I remember Atlanta back in the, you know, early, mid-90s. And early, mid-90s, Atlanta wasn't the Atlanta that you would think of today. Not at all. Not at all. Not at all. Now, you know, you think of Atlanta as Chocolate City. But early, mid-90s, nah. But black folks were there. Black folks were making inroads, but they were still making inroads. It wasn't like we was running it at all. Even though they had a black mayor, it wasn't like we was running it at all. You know, there was always a check on his authority and his power. Always a check. Now, nah. It's Chocolate City, without a doubt. You know, there's more millionaires in Atlanta than you chicken stick at because of the way contracts have been structured, because the way that the city has made a point of making sure that black folk got a part of that money. But in the 90s, that early mid-90s, nah, that wasn't happening. Not to this level, it was not happening, not at all. And I'm telling you, sis, you talking about a sea of black folk. I mean a sea of black folk. Because, again, you talking about down south, so the streets run forever. And I remember just taking it in, like, yo, this is crazy. I've never seen anything like this. Turning around and seeing all those cars going and coming up the street, and it was cars everywhere. And them cars were filled with black folks. Filled with black. It was like, yo, seriously, it was like it was a public service announcement to the white folks. Y'all just stay y'all asses home this weekend. Because if you leave out the house, you ain't getting nowhere. Because that's how many black folks were in Atlanta. That's how many black folks were driving in Atlanta, walking in Atlanta. It really was crazy. But crazy good. It was like, holy crap. Holy crap. And I'm telling you, it's like any other party, you know, Freaknik or Bus, you know, Freaknik 90, whatever. Freaknik or Die, you know what I'm saying? It was crazy. And it wasn't, you know, everybody just freaking and screwing in the middle of the road. It wasn't that. It was more to it than that. It was a big-ass party. No, I'm not going to tell you there were lectures. No, it was a big-ass party. Clubs sold out. Restaurants were booked to the gills. You know what I'm saying? You were waiting line forever to use the bathroom. You were waiting line
yourself, though. Okay, so how do you lose money? How are you losing money if all the restaurants are sold out, all the clubs are sold out, all the hotels are booked, all the motherfucking gas stations got niggas at them at the pump. All of the, you understand, all the liquor stores is jam-packed with gas. How do you lose money that way?
I just told you, you're not listening. You're hearing what you want to hear. I said if you could take that money, push it out because you have other money that you won't. Again, this is the South I'm talking. You got money from corporations versus money from black folks. You have long-term money because that money automatically adds to your tax base. It's not fluctuating. It doesn't care if it rains. It doesn't care if it snows. It doesn't care if it's hot or too hot. It doesn't care. That money will be constant because it adds to your tax base. That's how you lose money, sis. So, yes, they found another source of money that did not have to come on the black population or an increase of black population, which the city did not want. The city wanted guaranteed corporate money. That's how you lose money, sis. You get that short-term money, yes, every year, boom, boom, boom. If it's not too hot, it's not too cold, it's not this, it's not that. If you don't have to worry about if, when a corporation builds a headquarters and they quarterly are paying you taxes, you don't have to worry about an if. There's no ifs in that. What if the gas prices are too high and folks decide not to travel? What if businesses start to say, well, yeah, I like the money, but I ain't like the people. I ain't like the crowd. I don't want to deal with them. So they start shutting down for that weekend. All of a sudden, they go on vacation. You don't have to worry about that. That's what happened. I didn't contradict myself. I was extremely clear in what I was saying. Extremely clear. They didn't want those black folks in Atlanta. That's the part of this conversation you got to get over because it's a different lens than what you're used to seeing now, what you've been accustomed to. You've been accustomed to Atlanta and black folks being synonymous. In the 80s, 90s, it was not synonymous. It was not harmonious. At all. They did not want us there. And they got rid of our asses. And they put corporations
part of bothering me is when I got introduced to the concept of Atlanta as a Missourian, mm-hmm. yes, it was ma'am. Under the historical black college tour, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not
mm-hmm.
one. Mm-hmm. Not two. Not mm-hmm. three. Not mm-hmm. four, not five.
Okay.
It was four of them in a quadruplex, right? Meharry, Spelman, Morehouse, and Clark mm-hmm. are all within walking
yep.
distance of each other.
Yep.
Right? And that mm-hmm. did not account for the other campuses that had made allotments for black people. So I'm saying, if we're brought, other black people from the United States are brought to Atlanta,
mm-hmm.
okay,
mm-hmm.
under the this is where black people come to get educated. This is the black hub. This is black. In fact, they call Atlanta Black Mecca.
Now, Rashi, now. Now it's referred to as such. This is the point I'm trying to drive to you. Now it's referred to as such. In the early, mid-90s, it was not. It was not. It's like
even
Vegas.
Even with all those functioning universities.
Yes. Absolutely. Just because you came there to get educated doesn't mean they wanted your ass there to stay. You come in, we going to take your dough for 4 years. You get out, a fresh crop coming. That's it. That's it. Hell, what's the difference between that and Tuskegee University in Alabama? There's no difference. No difference. Yes, Atlanta is a hotbed of historically black colleges, without a doubt. Without a doubt. D.C. hosts one of the crown jewels in the HBCU universe, Howard University. They don't want niggas over there. There's gentrification going on right, left, left, and right around Howard. Howard was smart. Howard started coming and started buying up stuff and building out. Because if it didn't, it wouldn't exist. They would have got bought out. But gentrification is coming right, left, left, and right around Howard University. D.C. used to be called Chocolate City. It is not. Not anymore. It's more white folks move and flock into D.C. right, left, left, and right. Do you not think the same thing is going to happen to Atlanta? I'm not talking right now. 20, 30 years from now, do you not think the same thing is going to happen to Atlanta? Gentrification is coming everywhere. If you don't own it, you got to go. And those black folks that live in Atlanta proper or even in the immediate suburbs of Atlanta are going to constantly get pushed further and further and further out. And you have it now. You have Gwinnett County. And I'll release the secret. I've been saying this for years. The best place to move right now, in my opinion, is South Carolina, the portion of South Carolina that butts up against Georgia. Why? Because eventually they're going to move them black folks so far out of Atlanta that's where they're going to have to live in order to commute back to Atlanta. And there will be either high-speed rail or the MARTA will go out there or something. But I think that's the best place to live in America right now. The southern tip of South Carolina, that's right off that 85 corridor of the Georgia border. I think that's the best land purchase you can make right now in America. Because it's coming. It's coming. Folks are moving further and further and further north out of Atlanta. And the next place they're going to start to move to is South Carolina. And they're going to commute from South Carolina back to Atlanta. And that's why I said either the MARTA is going to go there, high-speed rail is going to go, something is going to connect the two in order to get workers back and forth to the city. But that's the play. That is definitely the play. Hell, I was looking at some property down there just the other day. Because if I stay in Charlotte, I'm like, well, shit, I might as well buy something while I'm down here. And I was not thinking about buying in Charlotte. I was like, well, I might as well get that piece now because I could turn that into a rental property and that'd be butter in another 5-10 years, without a doubt. You know, so that it's going to make me a whole lot of money in a couple of years. So by the time I retire, that'll be a very good source of income for me. I've been talking about that for years. I see it. It makes sense. You know, when I was in Vegas last, one of the things that held me up was the construction on 15 going from L.A. back to Vegas. Well, Rodney was telling me that that's a part of the train system that they're about to put in to run you from Vegas to L.A. And I'm like, okay, that's what's up. And he's like, yo, it makes sense. I said, yeah, absolutely it makes sense. because you have a huge influx of people moving from Cali to Vegas, but everybody ain't coming, so mama gonna be still in Cali, or auntie or grandma or somebody. So you gotta, you give people a different option of how to get back and forth to California. You know what I mean? But it also gives workers an option of where they want to live. So now it's like, well, I know Cali's expensive as hell, but I still want to keep my house out there, so I'll take this Vegas money and live in Cali, and I'll make it do what it do. Since I'm not living in Cali 24/7, or the Vegas money may be better than the Cali money. Who knows? Or it could be vice versa. You know, I may live in Cali, but want to move to Vegas full time and do that. Well, like I said, vice versa. Live in Vegas and want to move to Cali. I don't know why, but some people may want to do that.
Would you agree, though, that that freaknik behavior, right? It didn't go away.
Mm-hmm.
What we did was we injected it into hip hop, right? Well, it was already
mm-hmm.
there. You could not have had
it was already there, right?
Without Two Live Crew or whatever, right? It
Uncle Luke was the king.
Lukey Dookey and Ice T back in the day, N.W.A.
No. Do not put N.W.A. in that conversation because it was not the same. So I would say Too Short. I would say Ice T. I would say Uncle Luke, but definitely,
Spice
yeah.
One.
Hold on. So we got Thomas Berry on. Sound like he's going through a candy wrapper right now. But Thomas, would you say Spice One?
He's unwrapping the piece of candy his grandma gave
you
him
know
at church right now.
Would you say Spice One would be a contributor to that culture?
No, Spice, Ice, the West Coast guys were more gangster rap. The moody music was more so like that was all Luke and the bass, you know, the 95 styles. You know, that was Southern music. That the booty shake music was really Southern music more than anything else, right? But I'll say this though, I think that the freaknik, while it may have never went away, I do believe that the culture has been perverted from the 90s than what it is today. I think it was more heterosexual behavior in the 90s that today is more homosexual behavior. And I think it's a difference.
Oh, damn. Damn, Barry, why
you
dropping it like that? Drop it, Barry. Now, you can't that kind of argument. Talk to me, Barry.
I think that today's culture is not, you know, we went from Luke to Jerry Springer to Maury Povich. You know, I think that that's really where the culture is at today, even though it's a lot of booty shake music and it's a lot of sexual, innuendo music. I think that what happened with the freaknik, and y'all got to remember that, man, Atlanta changed forever. You know, when you talk to people that are native ATLians, man, they complain about the freaknik. They
Thank
are not
you.
Proud of the freaknik.
Thank you, Thomas.
They are not
proud
of the freaknik.
I was trying to tell
Rocky
the same thing before you came on.
They are not proud of the freaknik. They said this is where everybody came and infested our town. We are not happy with – they're not happy with the transplants. They're not. They feel like all of the stuff that you're seeing in Atlanta right now is from all over the country, and that's not Georgia behavior because you can't find that anywhere else outside of Atlanta, inside of Georgia. So they're not happy with what happened with the freaknik. That's everybody else that's happy with that. The people in Florida, oh, yeah, they're
Thank
happy
you.
About it. You know, the people from, you know, from New York, yeah, they're happy about it. The people from Chicago, yeah, they're happy about it. L.A., yeah, everybody else is happy about it because that spectacle wasn't done inside of their hometown, and it didn't change the DNA of their hometowns. Atlanta has been forever changed in a negative way because of the freaknik.
Huh? You can't hardly find nobody to have a negative other than Atlanta. Okay, but look, you talk to somebody from Minneapolis. You ask your peers, hey, did you ever make freaknik, right? They don't say,
mm-hmm.
Oh, hell no, brother. I never went down to that. They say, bro,
spectacle.
Look, I made it the summer of 94. I was forever changed, right? You don't
absolutely.
You don't. So for you to Can you hear that we have one paint, we have one canvas, right? One imaginative canvas. And you all have painted it. Everybody else is ready to use bright, beautiful colors, right? Freaknik is how we say it. For some reason, you two are painting it as Freaknik, you know?
We're painting it for what it was. And again, I'm happy, Thomas, that you came on and said basically the same thing I was saying. Yo, Freaknik was off the chain. It was crazy. And as I said to you previously, it was not what Atlanta wanted, and that's why Atlanta got rid of it. It was not what Atlanta wanted.
Okay, now
at all.
Freaknik wasn't 1 year. It wasn't 2 years.
No.
It wasn't five years.
It was like 20 years, 20, 22 years, something like that. Yeah.
When you are a city interested in shutting some shit down, it don't fucking take 20 years.
Yes, it does, because they didn't find the other money. They didn't find the other money, right?
Yeah, I was about to say that.
When the Olympics came and that Olympic committee came through and they did that survey and was like, yo, anything good but this. Y'all get rid of this, you gonna blow up. They was like, for real? Well, we were leaning on that. Look, dog, you ain't gotta lean on that. If you get rid of this after we leave, these mugs talking about coming through, blah, 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 blah. Oh, okay. That was a huge source of income for them. When they found another source of income, they was like, thank you niggas for coming, but y'all got to go. And they shut it down. Go ahead, Thomas.
And I would say that the music industry exploding in Atlanta too, outside of the Freaknik, I think that also helped because they started getting revenue in other. It's like replacing that revenue. Where do we find that revenue at? Okay, we can find it in other ways. We can be this booming metropolis where everybody's flying through. They got their business. It went from a little small country town to a city town. And once, like Lee said, once they did all those things, they were able to expose. The other thing that I would say, too, and I think this is the difference between our generation and today's times. I don't think any of that stuff that you're going to see from this documentary, I don't think that we would have said 20, 30 years ago it was cool to show that. That's the difference. The exposés on everything that we do today, I sometimes wonder, do we really understand what we're trying to expose to make a dollar? I know in the name of content, it seems like we'll sacrifice all sacred cows. And to me, the idea of showing what the Freaknik was, it's almost like we're trying to okay to usher in the next level of whatever degradation could be around the corner. And you ain't going to have a chance to talk to these youth about that because they're going to point back to what? This documentary.
And, man, when you see your mama and your aunt and them shaking their rumps, and look, let me tell you something. They was shaking them, dog. And it was some shorty shorts.
Hey, there's a
new It was some biker shorts.
Follow me, please.
It was a
it's a new May May app. Have you seen it, Lee?
Man.
She's bent over
no.
in front of the car. She's in the past. She's in the driver's seat. She's got her hands in the driver's seat. She has her ass, her anal canal and her vaginal canal are completely busted open. And there's a dude sitting next to one left cheek pointing at her sphincter. Now, kindly enough, Facebook has put a something over her sphincter, okay? But it says in the caption, please take this down. This is my mama.
But once again, in the idea of content, what are we exploiting here? And the other side that when I'm looking at these videos, I'm thinking like, yeah, that's crazy. But then I'm like, well, that's how Atlanta kind of got their stripper culture too, right? Like, these strippers didn't just come from nowhere. This is that stripper culture that is big in the South. Let's be honest. Stripper culture is big in the South. And so that's one side of it. And I know we're joking.
Hmm.
Thomas?
Looks like he might have
Thomas
lost.
Thomas fell off. Yeah, he fell off.
He didn't went to the danger zone. Hey, you
look,
think you're talking about
folks, some folks
who are canceling your
somebody from Freak Meat working the switchboard, they was like, hold on, you can see what's in the main click. You know? Somebody from Freak Meat got you for the
what
bird.
What are you prepared?
Hey, my apologies. I don't know.
96 would have been 30 years ago, right? What is it now?
Almost 30 years.
And I'm a 50-year-old woman. I'm 48. What am I prepared to be responsible for 30 years ago?
Go ahead, brother. But I want to say that those
women were dancing. That's a lot different than what that would be like today. Today it would be they're gonna be doing sex in the open now, and I think that we don't like we thought that was extreme. These folks are really living like some extreme stuff now today.
Yeah.
And that's the thing to me, and it's going to get these semantical arguments. Oh, she was shaking her ass like this. Yeah, shaking her ass is a lot different than somebody putting something in her ass. Okay? And I feel like that's the trajectory that we're on, and that's why I'm not laughing at the jokes, because I'm like, we're going to laugh ourselves into some more bullshit. And these mothers are already not really motherly. They're already not motherly. And so what are we saying? What do we want? Because it's great entertainment until that shit becomes reality.
So what happens, though, when the kids look at this video and they put together that that's Mr. Johnson or Mr. Williams and Miss Knight? And they was doing some things that they telling me I shouldn't be doing. You know? They're like, hold on. Oh, Lord. And, you know, because, look, a lot of those folks is in school. So a lot of those folks is in school to be teachers. A lot of these folks are teaching these kids nowadays, and they caught up on this.
That's exactly it. They're government people, right? They're elected officials. They're teachers.
They're doctors. They're lawyers. They're
doctors, lawyers, and politicians. But 30 years ago, they went to a concert where Juvenile was singing his song, and it's a contract that we had to bend over and bust it open. All black women signed a contract that when we hear from the 1999 to 2000, we signed a fucking contract when he said, when you want to put your hands in the bathroom, we all bend over. I'm an upstanding Christian woman. Bend over. When they said from the 99 to 2000, we didn't sign a piece of paper. There was no paper. But we agreed.
Representing from the 99 to the 2000.
That when he went up in his bag, the passing, with everybody, we all bend over. Okay? At some point, now I ain't trying to be funny because I'm not a Christian, but I do have a fairly strong moral code. So you will find no picture of Kansas City Freak Nick's Rashi Johnson, okay? But at 11:29, it's a paid Juvenile song. I'm on the dance floor. My hands are
over
on my knees. And I am busting it wide open. So this is
Lord
what I'm saying. At some point, there's a part of this that's just like our agreement with the culture. Our agreement with, like, this is what's happening now. Right now, your bang should start on the left and be crunchy hard. Like, this is in the 90s. Your bang should start on the left and be so hard that it could catch a bullet, and it ends on the right side in a hard plate-like swoop. That was the agreement. The agreement was that our hair should be, like, looking like little wave crinkles, right? Like a wave crinkle helmet. Right now, our agreement is that our lashes are 4.56 inches long.
Lord have mercy. We need to go back on that agreement.
Our agreement right now is that the 6-inch coffin nail with doodads and shit hanging from the tip is what's popping. And so black women agree to a cultural move, all right? And then they look back at us 30 years later and they say, look at these hoes.
Mm.
But we weren't hoes. We were just swept up in a cultural wave, a cultural movement. You wore a hoop earring on your nose. If you wanted to be a fly girl from 1985 to 1995, you had to get a gold tooth and you had to have a gold hoop hanging from your nose. It is what is.
Well, I don't want. Larashi, I don't think it's fair of us to say because people sisters are bouncing their ass and dancing that they're hoes per se. I don't want to conflate the dancing to what actually took place at the freak meet. I think that's a little bit different. I think that's more of the extreme side of the culture, what you saw at the freak meet. And I'm saying today it's even more extreme, but we don't contextualize nothing today. We just throw everything into the same pot. So the chicks that's in the club that's when back that ass come up, that's backing that ass up, they're not equivalent to the strippers that's on a pole. Ain't nobody, they're not getting naked while people throwing money there. They're shaking their derriere, but they're not naked. So that's a difference. And we have to always talk about that difference. Then, go ahead, sir.
No, I wanted to ask you a question before we transition to birth control because I think the one goes hand in hand with the other. Did you ever go to freak meet?
No, I didn't, bro. Around that time.
Did you hear that sadness in his voice? He said,
Rashi, I used to go to these parties here that were called slam parties. At the end of the night, all the chicks in the party was asshole naked at the end.
Okay.
I didn't need to freak me. We recreated those moments every Saturday with different chicks. So I didn't need to freak me. And what I tell people all the time, man, lions don't hunt in packs, bro.
I agree with that.
Your freak meat. You got a local version of what
I want to defend. I want to defend my fellow freak meat goers. It was not about sex all the time.
It wasn't. There you go. Tell me, because I think that's what people who didn't know. I think those are the only exploits that they hear about, but that wasn't what it was built upon.
Not at all. It was a big ass party. It was just a lot of black folks, a lot of young black folks who were on their way to become black entrepreneurs, black professionals. For the vast majority of them, some of them didn't make it, but for most of them, entrepreneurs, black professionals, all gathered together and let their hair down. And when they let their hair down, they let their hair down. It was crazy.
But it was a coochie hair. Never mind.
Oh Lord, have mercy. Speaking of coochies and hairs, so Supreme Court had to jump in this week. Because the federal judge in Texas made one ruling that was going to put the abortion pill on hold for the entirety of the nation. He basically struck the approval powers away from the FDA and said that one of the abortion pills was not authorized to be distributed at all. The governor of Massachusetts jumped out. She said that they're going to stock said pill and would make it available to anyone and everyone within the boundaries of the state of Massachusetts and those whom chose to travel to the state of Massachusetts. She would make it a safe haven, not only for the patients, but also for the physicians. Another court in Louisiana said that this was a mess. This week was a mess. Okay, no, the court in Texas was wrong. It still should be legal, blah, 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 blah. Hence the reason the Supreme Court had to jump in and say, okay, look, we're going to let the pill be distributed, period. As long as your state allows it, we're going to let you allow it, and we'll make a final decision on it in the next week. So they're expected to make a decision on Wednesday coming. Rashi, and, you know, we have a caller on, and I don't know if the caller is male or female. Doesn't matter. Area code is 352. If you want to say something, hit the number one, and we'll know you want to say something. I'm very curious from you or any other folk that's on with us this morning that may or may not be female, what your position is on this. Okay, well, I'll get with you, caller, in a half a second because I want to make sure I got your name before I bring you in live. Just give me a half a second. Let me finish my point. I'll start with Rashi because she's the only woman that I know of that's on the call with us right now. Rashi, how do you feel about these folks constantly playing with your uterus?
Right. So, unfortunately, I have to tell you that I've had two abortions, Lee. I've had two abortions, callers. My first abortion was as a 17-year-old girl who had been in the basement too long with her boyfriend. You know what I'm saying? And had used that time with him to escape the overall unhappiness of her home life, okay? And so while I did not want to be at home, I did not also want to be pregnant. You understand? So I did want my boyfriend. I did not want to be at home. I did want to broaden my horizons in the world of relationship, but I was not prepared at 17 to deal with a baby. So I opted to get, at that time, the abortion was $200. My mother paid $100. And the gentleman who had impregnated me, I was 17 and he was 20. He was 20 going on 21. And so he paid the other $100. He lived with his mother. Okay? And so I was not ready to be at 17 because in my head, I was going to college. I was going to conquer the world. All this other bullshit at 17, I knew. And so now my second abortion, Lee, happened when I was in my 30s. I was like 28 or 29 years old. And I had just miscarried. At 7 months, I had miscarried a baby, and I did not even make it 2 months later. I was pregnant again. I was still suffering. Wow. I was still suffering. I was married. I was still suffering with the loss of my previous baby. Like I said, my body had completely distorted for that other baby, and I had. But it was a stillbirth, and I had to give birth to it. They did not C-section that baby out of me. I gave birth to a dead baby. Understood? I was not prepared 2 months later to be starting all over again with a new baby. So I talked to my husband at the time, and he and I agreed that it was smarter for us, not me. Did you hear me? To have an abortion. So
That was probably possible because he couldn't read. That was the one that couldn't read, right?
No, that was my second husband who was an integrated power engineer. My first husband was from Haiti, fairly religious. Had I talked to my first husband about killing his baby, it would have been a problem. Highly religious men are incapable of having a decision, making a decision. I'm telling you what's happening. You what's happening. He was a devout man, and he didn't even go to church every Sunday, but he still believed in Jesus. He believed that all life was divined in God, right? So had I discussed an abortion with my first husband from Haiti, it would have been a problem. He would have asked me, what do you mean? He could not have conceived of it. What do you mean now, you're going to keep life?
Let me tell you why. I said, be careful. Good morning, Pastor Don. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, my brother. Very well. So, I've been on mute for a minute.
We got you. I wanted your input on this question about the abortion pill. How do you feel about it? I shouldn't say how you feel. What are your thoughts about it?
Well, my thoughts are like this, and I'm saying this, and I'm saying this as Donnell Green, not Pastor Don Jr., CEO. people should have the opportunity to make a choice, but when you make that choice, you should have made thought about the consequences of your choice prior to you laying down. So, I mean, I'm on the fence on both ends.
I got you. Okay.
I believe preventive medicine is better than the medicine itself. You can prevent an ailment from happening, prevent it. Don't go spend all this time with medication to fix it.
So you stay and strap up.
Yeah.
Make sure you strap up or get your pullout game in order.
The pullout never works. That's the only way.
Sir, I don't want to go too far, but my time is limited with Rodney today, so I got to get Rodney in. But I did want to ask you another question, and I apologize to everybody because I'm going to make a quick pivot because, again, we got to get to Rodney because Rodney has some stuff going on. I need his input. Sir, I wanted to ask you about gun control. So, you know, and you could put on either hat. You could put on the pastoral hat or you could put on your personal hat. Doesn't matter to me. But
okay,
what do you think is going to help us get over the hump of these mass shootings here in America?
Education is key. A lot of people are shooting people because they're uneducated, and the ones who have the education, they're not educating the people who don't know. Simple.
Okay. I saw something where the young man, his brain is going to be observed for is going to be dissected for CTE. So there's questions about that. And that disturbed me greatly, and I'll dig into that a little later. But before I let you go, I want to make sure we give the panel an opportunity to ask you questions. Thomas, you got any questions for the brother?
No, I had a response, but I don't want to necessarily take up too much time with our brother Rodney getting in. Hey, Pastor, nice to meet you. I like a lot of what you were saying there. Hopefully, we'll have time in the future for more dialogue for sure.
Amen.
Well,
Thank you, sir.
He's called in before, so hopefully he'll join us more often, and that's what's up. I appreciate that. Rashi, you got anything to say?
I've already told you, when you start delving into other people's philosophy about what happens to a woman's body, that's when you start dealing with chaos. Allow women to tell you what should happen.
To women. Respect
to women.
Respect that. Brother Rodney, you got anything to ask?
It's such a touchy issue, and it's an issue that's been going on. The state at the most recent, I think, decision was made to kind of keep things on the status quo. I'm glad that that happened. And in general, one of the things that the pastor said about the education, I'm with education. I'm kind of curious, is what education, though? That was what was on my mind when he said education.
Pastor?
I apologize, I was on mute. When I say education, I'm thinking educated on the repercussions, educated on the outcome, not just how you feel right now, but what happens after you get past your feelings and the reality sets in. What are you up with? I think it would be a whole different discussion if more people thought about the after effect, not just taking care of the problem, but the consequences after, however you deploy to take care of that problem, those consequences afterwards is what we live by. It's not the person who was going to the Super Bowl. It's the person who's in the paper the next day with the championship ring. That's what they remember, if that makes sense.
So, Pastor, if I could have ask a little further, are we talking reproductive health education in school so that children learn the physiology of reproduction from the physical, the mental, as well as what happens when the child gets here, and also how to prevent that child from making that child in the first place?
Preventive maintenance is so much better than cure. As a cancer patient, any kind of victim of any major surgery, you ask me, they could have had a pill they could have took prior to going through all the chemotherapy. My grandma had that. She had cancer, and it was bad. It was bad. I mean, I watched her literally deplete, and it took a lot out of me. So I'm all about education. If you know better, you can do better. If you don't know, then you just suck. So on that note, I'm landing my plane.
Hey, so let me jump in since we went into that one. Because I think that when we talk about the shootings that's taking place with the mass shootings, that a lot of these young white boys are sexually frustrated. And I always wonder the rhetoric that we talk, do we really understand where do we land after we talk the way that we talk? This country always believes in absolutes and is never somewhere in the middle. And I think that's part of the problem, whether we're talking about gun control or abortion. I talked to our governor here in the state of Minnesota about TANF, which is Title I funding. And the four principles of TANF is really to not only create families, but also help maintain families so they're not on the system, so they can get off the system by homes, but stay married and build families. I think that part of the problem that we have is that we devalue the family system in this country. And that's part of the reason why we have so many abortions. We just don't value human life. Like that's the problem. We have no value for human life, and we don't have no value for relationships. So when you devalue something, you need to discard it. And in the instances where we do need abortions, where women are raped or women or people are going through medical situations, it's not one size fits all. It's just a tool. It's not a tool that should be used all the time. Like, you don't need to hammer the screw in a screw. But I just think that we have a hard time having conversations and then contextualizing when it's a need versus when it's not a need, and we do a one-size-fits-all, and I think that's where we struggle. Same thing with guns. If we don't have guns, other countries with guns are going to invade this country and take it over. So we can't be all the way for gun control. So the gun's not the problem. It's who got the gun and how they're using the gun. What's the education behind it? But in this society now, we got kids. We got young adults not having sex, people. They're not even having sex. We didn't talk these kids out of having sex. And if they're having some homosexual sex. Listen, brother, but when it's when these kids are frustrated and they're getting these guns because they're upset, they're listening to this right-wing radio, and they're mad because they feel like as a man they're supposed to be able to procreate, and they are not procreating. They're becoming the outburst is violent. Nobody's talking about that. As much as we talk about,
well, no, they are.
Sexual,
Mr. Berry, they're called the incel. The gentleman you're describing is called an incel. They're called involuntarily celibate individuals, and these are people who are not they can't have sex. But the people have looked at them and deemed them unworthy of sexual activity. And that has built up that frustration from within, from not being able to be picked out of the pick-me culture. And when they say, oh, you don't want to fuck me? Fine. Catch this bullet.
Oh, wow.
Let me let the pastor go properly. Pastor, thank you. You continue to listen, please do. If not, we understand, but we need to move on to the next segment of the program. Thank you, sir.
Hey, thank you too, Elder. I appreciate you, and shouts out to everybody that called in and supports this broadcast. I really appreciate it. I'm gonna listen.
Come
appreciate
on,
you.
Come on with it. Call
thank
on
you,
in
thank
and
you,
support.
Thank you.
Yes, man.
So,
Rashi cussing in the church.
And that's what put me out the first time.
I'm trying not to go to hell. That's why I had to get a pass off. I'm trying not to go to hell.
No, this is what I'm trying to explain. This is not my first excommunication. The first time they excommunicated me because I could not understand a virgin birth. I 100%, they should have rebranded the virgin birth. I'm serious. You lose so many Christians who are ready to sign on for the doctrine, but they get lost under the concept of virgin birth. Understand? When I brought that to my pastor, who was a black liberation theologist under James Cone, and the person who called should know who I'm talking about, when he tried to explain to us that, you know, that the whole intricacies of European religiosity, African religiosity, where they meet, what you can kick out, what's real, what's not real, I was no good as a Christian after that. Once you explain to black Christians black liberation theology, they're not usable as old Christians are. And I could try to explain that in a further broadcast, but there are two Christians. There's the ones who are ready to do the work of actual modern day liberation, and then there are those who are ready to keep and upstand 2,000, 3,000-year-old mantras that do not apply easily to modern-day reality. And so that's what got me kicked out. You're right, Thomas.
Let's go to the one we got on hand. How about that? What's up, Brother Rodney?
You, brother, just enjoying the last moments, you know, with my son before he rolls out. So I'm just hanging with you all as best as I can in between doing that with him.
Brother Rodney. Brother Rodney. I've been cultivating, I've been priming a young lady here in Kansas City for your son. I'm not ready yet, but tell your son to be ready, okay?
Oh, okay, I think he's been ready since he was 25, but I'll pass it on.
tell old Sarge we said what's up and have a safe travels back to the no man's land, because, you know, good Lord, he in the middle of no daggone way. That's what's up. Man, what do you think about the CTE situation with that young shooter, that young boy down there in Kentucky, man? I think the family's trying to evade being held accountable. I don't know if his family comes from money. I didn't do digging into that. I was doing some other stuff. But that's my concept. My thought right now is they're trying to prevent any civil lawsuits from coming after them and whatever they may or may not have. That's why they're trying to get in front of this, talking about he may have CTE.
You know, I think that in general, I actually like the idea that somebody has said we should study these people who commit these heinous acts. If I recall properly, and somebody please chime in that's listening, if you have some information on this, it's my understanding that when President Obama was in office, he had commissioned, I believe it was from HHS, a study on what he called the health crisis, which was these mass shootings and deaths by guns in general. And it was the Congress who basically said that we weren't even going to study this because of the gun lobby. And I think it was a huge mistake. So whatever their motivation for doing it, I believe studying their brains after they've committed these acts, I'm for it. We should be studying these people's brains beforehand to see what's going on. Brother Barry and Sister Rashi hit the nail on the head. There's something going on with people, whether it's incel and a lack of sex, too much sex, drugs, video games, general society. I always say a sick society produces sick people, and there's no group sicker in society than white people. Doesn't matter, because they're the ones who seem to have no problem taking other people's lands and saying they found it. They had no problem taking people and saying that those people owed them their labor and their life and their progeny. So there's a sickness that's been in this country since before it was a country, and I believe we're seeing the manifestation of that sickness. Colin Powell, the late Colin Powell, before he passed, said there's a dark vein that runs through the heart of this country. And racism and white supremacy, though some of my black brothers and sisters have an issue with me saying it, I've always believed it is a mental health issue that doesn't take them off the hook, but it is a conditioning that has happened to white people that affects us all. So, yes, I'm thankful that somebody, especially that's white, said we need to study these people, but the study shouldn't be just after the fact. We need to look back at all of these people who've committed these acts and study what led up to them committing the act. So hopefully we can have some of that preventative medicine that the pastor spoke of.
I'm trying to see. Okay. All right. Because you know I'm an application dude, Mr. Rodney. As a scientist, it's literally about changing the conditions so you can affect the outcome, right? I'm like, I'm boiling this down real basic, Mr. Rodney, so I can. So I'm a person. Let's take the new dude in Kentucky, right? I'm a person who's a family affiliated with somebody who I think proposes the ideas, verbalizes the ideas, has erratic behavior, has access to guns, has let me get this right. I'm trying to get it right, Mr. Rodney. One, you have to have access to guns. You have to have some kind of biochemical mental imbalance. Will you agree, Mr. Rodney?
On this particular issue, I do not believe it is necessarily a biochemical imbalance because many of these people have no mental health issue, at least no diagnosed mental health issue.
But that's impossible, Mr. Rodney. If you are ready to hurt others who have not hurt you, that's the very definition of mental illness.
So, yeah, but there's a delineation between where does the mental illness come from? In other words, is the mental illness is the behavior from mental illness due to a biochemical something, or is it because of the person's environment? And it may actually have nothing to do with chemical imbalances. What it has to do with the conditioning of a person from their surroundings, their environment.
Right.
In other words, it's more nurture instead of nature.
All environments cause biochemical, neurological changes. All of them. There is a direct relationship, Mr. Rodney, between the experiences that you have in your perceived reality to the biochemical, neurological networking that happens in your brain. So you really only have to have one. Only one dog, Mr. Rodney, has to bite you. One. For you to establish a fear of dog. Can you hear that?
Yep.
Honestly, the dog doesn't actually have to bite you. Once you perceive the fear of a dog potentially biting you based on the circumstances, like it could have bit you, it can set up the neurological network for you to be afraid of from the Chihuahua to the Great Dane, all dogs, no matter which type of dog it was that laid down the neurological track. Understood? Can you hear that? Will you agree? Can you understand what I'm saying at least? If you don't agree, do you understand what I'm saying?
I understand how that process works. What I'm saying to you, though, is in this particular instance, and in most instances of conditioning, it is not a matter of sort of readjusting the chemical first. It is a matter of readjusting the behaviors and the perceptions, which can be done by counseling. So that doesn't necessarily mean that there is a chemical imbalance that is that's out of order. It just means that there is the environment in which you live that impacts us all, which promotes a certain behavior. And so if you remove a person from that environment, or you a person is never in that environment, i.e. two twins who pretty much have everything in common and they have different behaviors, but those behaviors that they have are not necessarily due to a chemical imbalance. It is specifically due that they were, their exposures to things were different. And hence, when a person, when we want to break the conditioning of a person that has been taken out of their environment, then once you've been removed from that environment, behaviors go back to normal without any adjustment, or at least any external introduction of chemicals to adjust the chemicals. It is strictly behavior that's the issue.
You're saying that America has a behavioral problem, and a lot of it is based off of the environment in the homes, or as well as the influences that people put themselves around. And I agree with that. I agree with that particular matter, but I also say that I just feel like our society in general right now, because of the extreme sides, human beings are not meant to be on extreme sides of anything. We all kind of teeter when we're healthy in the middle, right? And so I look at these shootings and I see how they're ramping up, where they're starting to be more and more inside of schools. I mean, remember the original school shootings when I was coming up, it was the Columbine situation, which was what happened with some teens that were inside of the school. Now we're dealing with adults who are not going, they're just showing up to the school and shooting the schools up, which is scary. You know, having a child that's in school, or sons that's in college, to know that you can get that call one day that they're shooting up the school where your kid is going. And so I say to you, Brother Rodney and Lee, you know, do y'all think that it's more so about the gun needing to be in control, or even these schools, shouldn't these schools have better measures than what they do right now currently?
Well, I'll get on that first. I'll get on that first. You know, here's the reality. No matter what the schools do or don't do, there's always cracks. There's always ways to get something into a school. Just like there's ways to get something in prison. A maximum security prison. Mm-hmm. So a gun is still getting in school if a kid wants a gun in school. It goes back to what Pastor said. Really, it is about education. And it's about education not only to the child, but also to the adults who own the guns. You know, too often these kids are having full access to these guns. Why? Your child should not have full access to the guns in your home. That should not be the case. Even if he or she has a gun of their own that you gifted them when they are of age, they still should not have full access to that weaponry. And if they do have full access to the weaponry, they should not have full access to the weaponry and the accessories necessary to kill somebody, i.e. the magazines and the bullets. They shouldn't have full access to them all. Folks are getting too loose. They're getting too loosey-goosey. And because of that, children are children. Children are going to do what children are going to do. Somebody's being bullied. They want to push the bully away. Somebody wants to be braggadocious. They want to flaunt whatever they have. And if whatever they have is the new Canic FN-76, and, you know, nobody got one yet, then they're going to come to school with the new Canic FN-76. That's what kids do. So children are being children, regardless of what year it is, what millennia it is, whatever. That's what they're doing. So, again, a nod to the pastor, yes, it's about education, but a nod to we need to not only educate the children, but we also need to educate the adults. We need to educate the children on this is not a toy. This is not a cartoon. You pull that trigger and someone gets hit, someone is going to lose their life. You don't get to press the button and they get a recharge. It doesn't work that way. So we need to press that upon them as well. But it's a multi-layered thing. Again, it's about making sure that the adults are doing what they're supposed to do for the children not to be put in that situation, and then making sure that as the adult, you're impressing upon that child the real consequences of that piece of equipment, because that's all it is. It's a tool, that piece of equipment that that child puts in his or her hand. Rodney, what are your thoughts?
So I do believe that the basis of what you said, I'm with it 100%. It is a tool, and like all tools, they can be abused. I said it earlier, I say it again, a sick society produces sick children. A confused society produces confused and abhorrent children. And until you fix those things in society, it's very difficult to fix these things in children. We were having a discussion yesterday, and it was on relationships, and pretty much I boiled it down to, you know, what we learn in society. And we're in a situation where society, the external forces on a home, have more power over our children than those people in the home. And I still go back to something that happened during the pandemic, is that the government and agencies wanted to get children back in school so they could check on the well-being of those children, because they had so little confidence that parents were adequately taking care of their children. In other words, they had to bring the children back for a health check from the parents. And they found out that many children, from looking at those videos, were living in horrible situations. And that is a problem. I've talked to educators at various levels with different degrees, but it's specifically when it comes to education, psychology, and sociology. And they have all told me that it is what's going on in the home or not that is breaking down our children's protection from being introduced to these abhorrent behaviors, and therefore we're going to see more of it, not less. And even though there are other actions that can be taken externally, that child eventually has to go back home. And it's what is that child being exposed to internally at that house? And then what is going on, what is being allowed in that house externally that's impacting that children? And a good many of those things today, different from yesterday when I was growing up or when you were growing up, those things are things that causes confusion in children, and there is no standard, or the standard is kind of wobbly. And through that confusion, and maybe from some of the incel stuff that was spoken about earlier on, not having sex and you're not able to do this, but you should be doing that, there's a lot of that that's impacting our children, which is quite possibly why I think it's 15 to 32 or something like that is the average range of people who commit these acts. That is in the developmental stages of life and shortly after the development of the brain, which is actually at 27. So that is something that should be studied.
Now that's so, 27, Brother Rodney, with proper nutrition. That's 27 with proper education. That's 27 with, how about this, two parents in the home. That's 27 years old with all these tenets of society still intact, that they are not ready to admit no longer exist. We are almost at the point where we don't have two parent households. The two parents are not husband and wife. It's the mama and the grandma, right? It's his daddy and his daddy's girlfriend. It's the two people who are there are either one, not permanent. You can get one permanent to no permanent adult, meaning they go to jail, they leave town, they they send you to your grandma while they handle some business in their lives. That becomes a zero parent situation. So this idea of when the human mind becomes ready to deal with the tenets of what's happening to us in America, when they say it's 18, 21, or even what you say, Brother Rodney, 27, all that is conditional. All those are flux. All those have tenets to them or principles to them that are not commonplace within our society. So saying that if by 25, if you ain't grown by 25, then it's on you is a poor statement of how we're actually operating our reality here in this country. Because these people are hungry. These people have had ramen noodles 7 days of their existence. These people have been taught under the grade level for their actual grade at, in more than one grade level. Am I saying that right?
Yeah,
more
it
than one grade level. Okay.
More than one grade, it makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Okay, their parents was high. You understand? They grew up, that's right. They grew up around drugs. They grew up around weed. They grew up around crack. They grew up around meth, okay? And they tried at least one, because I'm telling you, I smoked one of my mama's cigarettes. How many of your people's cigarettes did you smoke, Lee?
Ho. You ain't got to bring me into this situation.
This
I'm minding my business.
How many of the cigarettes that were around you did you grab and practice with?
And it wasn't cigarette. It was weed that I was smoking, if you,
you
want to know.
You were playing with weed. Brother Rodney, how many of the – Brother Thomas, how many of the cigarettes that you were around, the weed you were around, the corner pocket piece of the beer can that was left on the table, how many of those did you drink? And so now when you say 27 is the marker, it's not 27, it ain't even 37, and I'm barely making the marker. When we start talking about the pressures and the stressors that are being put on the human mind in its developmental stage, and we start making a statement saying, at this point, you should know better. At this point, you should know better than to shoot your classroom out. At this point, you should know better than to kill your siblings and your parents. At this point, you should know better than to kill yourself. When we start talking about that, we are not, I'm sorry, as a psychologist, we are not making an account for just how many deterrents to human development in America there are.
But we cannot make excuses for everybody who had a rough time either. Because we still are a society, and as that, we have to be social. And no matter what your challenges are, it is still your charge to make it through. Now, it doesn't mean that it's going to be the perfect thing for you to do, or you're going to have the perfect world to grow up in, but you still got to make it through to where you are at least reasonably responsible. And when folks step out of that realm, there are consequences they have to pay. Again, going back to what Pastor said, about the education, and, you know, you have to be reasonably responsible, and you have to understand that there are consequences when you step outside of what has been considered norm by society as a whole, regardless of how you feel. I say that again, regardless of how you feel or what you may think, it is what it is. You know, a garden hose is a garden hose. Regardless if the garden hose wants to think of itself as a fire hydrant, it's still a garden hose. It's only going to be able to do what a garden hose does because it was not designed to be a fire hydrant. The same thing is true about a car. The same thing is true about people. You can see, Piers Morgan, I think, had an interview with a young lady who was defending the LGBTQ community. He was like, well, what if I feel like I'm a black lesbian woman? Is that not true? I'm a black lesbian woman. Can I not say that? He's not black. He's not a woman. He's not lesbian. He could feel however he wants to feel, but the world is still going to see him as such. These young folks, they can feel, or they could be destitute, or they could be deprived of whatever. But the world is going to see them as a young adult or an adult. And as an adult, the world has said these are the things that we will or will not accept from you. And if you go into the we do not accept column, there are consequences for those things. That's why there are prisons and, as a psychologist in you, there are mental institutions. We have to make
and
the determination
can I say this,
as a society. Hold on, give me. I'm going to wrap it up right now. We have to make the determination as a society which one you belong in, the prison or the mental institution. Go ahead, brother.
And I think that when we started letting people say words like their truth or their reality, that's where society is. This is the problem.
Tip the scale?
Because, man, it tips the scale all the way in the wrong way. Because we have a shared reality. And the truth is shared. It's not yours.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is shared too, by the way. It's not yours. The one thing that we don't have that used to be stated so much in, when I was coming up was the term discipline. To be successful in anything, if you got a degree in anything, it's a discipline in something, right? What are we teaching these young folks to be disciplined in? And I will say this, part of it is the coddling. We're scared to tell people the actual reality now because of the coddling.
Right.
Exactly. And so now a dog can be a cat or a man can be a woman because we're living in these rules where as long as you think it, so be it. That's the truth. And we know that that's not reality. And we also know it's not healthy for the psyche of the folks who are being coddled or told these things. That's why we have so many young folks who are suffering from depression, anxiety, and all kinds of personality and body disorders. Because they're being told, be what you want to be, right? You know, a lot of folks don't know. I always joke with folks to say, man, y'all know why Bruce Jenner got that sex change, right? And they say, what? I say, he didn't want to go to a male prison. He didn't want to go to a male prison. What he wanted to do was, in the state of California, he knew if he got a breast transplant and he went to jail for that vehicle homicide, that he, by getting the breast, was going to be put into a female prison. Hence the reason why he kept his penis. Hence why he still date women. But it's all about this game and playing on people. And, you know, I'll say this in our land. You know, basketball, one of our favorite sports, Brother Lee, one of the coaches was upset about all of the transfers that were happening in college basketball. And what he was mainly upset by was, you see what the reasons that they were using that made him upset. Because as an older man, he understood, hey, this is where we take mental health and we play these games. When everyone is saying that it's for mental health reasons, and you're landing on saying that there's something wrong with your psyche when we know it's not, then we excuse everything that people do, say it's more of a mental thing. We have a lack of discipline, people. I'm gonna say this,
and then we can all start to wrap it up because we'll have about 5 minutes left. This all started with that damn pink campaign. Y'all remember that? When people walking around here, these damn women walking around here with black stuff on that says pink. They had purple on that says pink. See that? I said right then and there, this shit was gonna lead to some confusion. That's not pink. It's purple. No, it's pink. No, that led to the damn confusion that we in right now. Now you got your damn kid walking around thinking green pink, yellow pink, black pink. It ain't pink. It's pink. God damn it. Let it be what it was, and then we wouldn't be where we is. You know what I'm talking about right
here? Let me finish this off because I just got some news less than a month ago that my son has identified himself as loosely a pansexual, but at the very least a bisexual. Okay? He has a gentleman that he went to high school with. He went to middle school with. Who now lives in Oklahoma that he talks to every day about, I hesitate to even ask what that conversation is about. But I have realized now that it's a possibility that my son is not going to give me any children. And if he does, it'll be from a woman who he has accepted a really wide behavior spectrum from because he is accepting behavior from all genders. You hear me? I'm not going to be able to look for even a nice, decent, whatever white girl. He's going to bring me a punk rock Asian guy. This motherfucker's going to show up with a black girl with purple, you know, with the ice purple hair. He's going to, he has forced me in his sexuality to accept the fact that he's going to show up with, you know, some white dude with dreadlocks, right? And I'm going to have to deal with, I'm going to have to accept these humans as they are, as I am accepting my son as he is, right? So this is what my last statement to our listeners. You can get cute out here and draw your line in the sand. I don't fuck with faggots, you can say. I don't fuck with non-Christians. If you illiterate and can't read, which is my personal line in the sand, Lee knows this. If you illiterate, don't play with me. I don't like dummies. But your children, your grandchildren, your nieces and your nephews, they're going to bring this new element to your reality, and you have to decide. You're either going to open or you're going to close out the people that you had already made a space for. I'm either going to accept the Asian dude who speaks patois that my son is going to bring in, or I'm going to close out my son. You hear me? And I'm not prepared for a reality without my son.
Okay.
Oh, which means I am ready to accept the white girl with booty length cornrows who want to call me nigger. I'm going to have to accept the white dude he bring from the Netherlands, right?
Rush, we're trying to wrap up the show. You can't continue.
Be willing, listeners, to accept that reality that you have decided no.
All right. Rodney, what did you have to say?
Well, I guess I'm going to end it with a question. Should we accept all things just because it's our children or someone that we love? Because if that becomes the basis of it, then what Thomas was talking about was about discipline, even right and wrong, because there's people who do abhorrent things that hurt us. And when people do things that hurt us or hurt society, should those things be accepted simply because it's someone close to us? I'll just leave it at that.
Well, I'll answer that question. No. So I can still love you, but I do not have to fool with you. And that is me loving you because I have to still remember who I am and what I represent and what I'm about. And if you go against that, you have every right to. I'm not mad at you at all. It's your life. You can live your life however you choose to live your life. But when you come into my home is run the way that I run my home. If the way you live your life is in conflict with the way I run my home, then you may not want to come to my house. Family, thank you very much for joining. Thank you for listening live and listening later. You all be good. You all be safe. As we say every week about this time, we love you and the damn thing you can do about it. Take care.